Hello, and welcome to the first episode on The Adventures. As you heard in the intro, we will be talking about Mount Everest this episode. This is part of one of a two-part series on Mount Everest, and let me tell you, there is so much on this mountain that honestly we could do an entire season on if we wanted to. But maybe in later episodes we might do more on this later, mention it maybe when we're talking about the Himalayan mountains, but not right now. So Jake is here today, so we'll get to hear from him a little bit, and I want to start off by saying, Jake, let's have you introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Jake. I'm one of Kale's friends. Some of my favorite things to do are play sports with him and kind of hang out. I wore a suit today at school. That was pretty great.
I did too.
Yeah, it was for history, so, you know, some cool adventurers being adventurous. And yeah, I love to do podcasts with Kale here. Me and him love to do this, so.
He is also on my other podcast, Share a Little Happiness, if you want to go listen to him. It's, I think, Friend to Friend or something like that, but.
Yeah, Friend to Friend.
Okay, thanks, Jake, for introducing yourself.
No problem.
Let's begin with some information that all of us should know by now. But just to refresh a little bit, of course, pretty much everybody should know this. Mount Everest is the tallest on land, mountain in the world. Emphasis on land.
Yeah. Yes, there is a mountain that is taller under the ocean. It is called Mount Chimborazo.
Chimborazo
is the tallest mountain in the world, although it is smaller above sea level. But if you measure the entire thing with the part that's under the ocean, it has the tallest elevation from the Earth's core.
So that's kind of a cool fact that some, I mean, I'm pretty sure that people know that, hey, Mount Everest isn't, well, it's the tallest mountain in the world, yeah, but not the tallest, it is the tallest mountain above sea level, but if you measure some mountains that go under the sea level that are kind of like islands, there are some that are taller, and the tallest one is Mount Chimborazo. So that's kind of cool. Mount Everest, although, is known all over the world, and the most dedicating climbers always want to summit it. You really have to be an experienced climber. You have to have these like health permits to climb it, and all these different things that you have to require to have it. And it is a lot of money to do an expedition or go on one at least. It is definitely one of the most body-breaking, exhausting, dedicating things that you could ever do. Now, some information about this incredible mountain. The very first people to summit this site were Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay.
Although, this might be false, but there were the first recorded summiters.
Wait, just to say this. They were the first recorded ones that I believe did summit and then came back down or were seen coming back down. But I'm pretty sure that there's exact records that they were the first people to summit the mountain.
There have been beliefs that George Mallory and Irving were the first people to summit Everest. These two were last seen on the first or second step of the climb and were never seen again, so, like most people.
That's not true. That's definitely not true on Mount Everest. Most, well, no, listen, nowadays, it's still hard. It's still hard to summit Everest, but it is easier than it was in 1950. Or, wait, 19, like, below, sometime below 1950 or in 1950, I don't really know. But George Mallory and Andrew Irving, were supposedly, there's no records of them making, they died on the top and were never seen again after the first step, so we know they're dead, and George Mallory's body was actually recovered, but we'll talk about that later. But they could have been the very first people to summit, and Yes, we will come back to these two. But for those of you who don't know the checkpoints, talking about like the first and second steps, if you don't really know what those are, we'll explain them a little bit better. So there are four camps included on this insane hike. There is base camp, the very bottom one that is the warmest. Still, it's not very warm up there anyways already. Yeah. Advanced base camp. The North Col. So we're talking about the ones that isn't. Which side is it on? It's on the north side of the northern hike. Because there are two ways you can get up. There's the southern and the northern.
Yeah.
Both of them are challenging.
Almost like the North Pole, the North Col. Hey, is that where Santa is?
Get it? No, I'm just kidding. But so advanced base camp and then the North Col, the north side. There's also the South Col on the other side. Camp 3, which is the highest camp, and that's the last place you get to sleep. Because we'll get on that later. And then there's the first step. And then the second step, which supposedly Mallory and George Mallory and Andrew Irving were last seen. They think it was definitely the second step, but it could have been the first. We don't know. And then there's the third step. And then finally, you're at the summit after that. Like Jake said, George Mallory and Andrew Irving were last seen on the first or second step. Howard Somerville was supposedly the last person to see them, and if you saw them on the second step before they disappeared, they would have been about 800 vertical feet away from the summit, which was pretty close. That was really close, and they could have made it, but they were never seen again. Like I said, they died. There was an expedition to find a camera that Andrew Irving was carrying to see if he took a picture at the summit. And they did find George Mallory's body somewhere on the face of the mountain on May 1st, 1999.
Several expeditions were set to find Andrew Irving's body.
After they found George Mallory's. Yeah, actually, also before. Because everybody knew about Andrew Irving and George Mallory kind of in the 1970s. I think the very first expedition to find him was in 1975 to go up there and find him. But they had decent gear. There had been a few people that summoned Emma's, but keep going.
But nobody has recovered the body. People have said that they have seen the body. Everybody says that, like they've seen UFOs.
Well, but there have people that seen bodies that they didn't know that were, Jake just did quotation signs, but that have seen the bodies, but we don't really know, honestly. But keep going.
The most resigned expedition set out in 2015 and went to what was told to be the exact spot his body would be. They went to that spot and weren't able to find anything. They believed it was moved in a huge storm and fell into the unknown. So basically, that tells us that it's impossible to find the camera that could have changed the course of history.
Almost impossible. Let's just say that
there's
because
no such thing as almost impossible. It's impossible or it's
Jake. Good. Jake. It is. There is almost impossible. There are things that people have said have been impossible, then have been done. But, it is going to be, if they ever do try to find him, extremely hard to find him, because avalanches come, a bunch of different things come that mess up the areas, and you're not able to find them if they're deep. 100 feet underneath the snow.
His body's gonna be, like, decomposed.
Well, actually, no. They mummify in this temperature, if you didn't know. Their skin freezes, and their insides mummify. That's why George Mallory's body was recovered in May 1st, 1999. And one of the people who found George Mallory set off on an expedition, in, like, 2015, to find him. But that was a good story about him. If you want to dig deeper into George Mallory and Andrew Irving, there is a thing on Disney Plus that you could listen to that is called Lost in Everest. And I've watched it like 3 times, I think, because it's so cool to see him searching for, mostly that one is searching for Andrew Irving's body, but honestly, I researched this, but I think that the scariest part of this mountain is the death zone. Like I said earlier, talking about after camp three, last time you can sleep above, basically almost above there is the death zone. This is located about 8,000 meters or 26,000 feet from the bottom of the mountain. If you fall asleep in this on the insane conditions of the death zone, you will die. And that's how most people die, is they run out of energy and they die.
Just fall asleep.
And here's what here's what people call it. They fall asleep and never wake up again.
Peaceful sleep. Very peaceful.
Not really peaceful, but kind of just a moment of silence. Just a moment of silence. Just respecting those people. Yeah, I already said that. This part of the mountain requires oxygen because you can't breathe up there. The air is too condensed too thin. Not condensed. The air is too thin up there. So you do need oxygen tanks. And George Mallory and Andrew Irving, they had oxygen tanks, but they were heavy, they were complex, and, man, they were horrible. They had horrible gear. They had, like, these just cotton coats that they took. Leather caps, leather goggles. They had these terrible spiked boots. Like, just leathered boots. I'm pretty sure back then, if you were to hike in those, you'd get frostbite all over your body. But, we'll talk about that later. No, we won't actually talk. Well, maybe in the next episode. But, just for a spook, we'll have another moment of silence after this, but there have been over 200 deaths on Mount Everest. So, it's kind of sad to think about. There are several, if you hike up there, you can see this on Lost on Everest. There are several frozen bodies at the top that you walk by. And it's pretty sad. that serves as definitely a reminder to all those who choose to follow in their footsteps. But nowadays, last year there were only 4 deaths, but still, 4 deaths. In 2021, there were 4 deaths. Jake, you want to line things up? All right,
let's talk about something more enjoyable, shall we, Mr. Sad Man? 6,014 people have summited this gigantic beast.
So
that is a checkpoint, like, record right there. And Cammy, Rita,
no. Stop for a second. Oh,
sorry.
So 6,014 different people.
My bad.
Have summited. It didn't say that, but they're all different. They're not the same person, but talk about this person really quick. Go.
Cammy Rita Sherpa has been able to summit the beast 24 times. That is insane. Like, who does that? It's like, oh, great, I did it one time. But if you do it 24 times, sorry, my bad. But 24 times, that is risky. That is very, very risky. Man.
Yeah, well, that was recent. Her most recent time was her 24th time, but she's must have experience. So if I were to ever hike it, which I won't, I'd probably want her to guide me.
She lives there, so, like, it's just...
Giving some credit to National Geographic. We got some information off of theirs. But just reading off of some of their stuff... So, climbing Mount Everest has become a popular expedition for mountain climbers. However, it is a dangerous undertaking. Climbing Everest requires a lot of experience mountaineering elsewhere. I don't know how many people have actually summited the Seven Wonders of the tallest seven mountains in the world. In the seven, are there seven different continents?
Yes.
the tallest mountains in all seven continents. Mount Everest climbing industry has become controversial. As popularity of the climb has increased, there have been more traffic jams as climbers spend too much time in the death zone waiting for their chance to go up to the summit. So in 2015 or 14, well, it might have been, I don't really know, but on the Lost on Everest, there was the biggest traffic jam recorded, and there were hundreds of people just lined up trying to reach the summit of Everest. And like it said, too much time in the death zone is fatal.
Fatal.
Fatal. Jake, do you want to read the right here? From right here.
With more people has also come from more pollution up near the summit as climbers often discard unwanted items all along the mountain. Additionally, the Sherpa people have been exploited by climbers, and their traditional way of life has been disrupted by foreign climbers. Sherpa guides are faced with some of the highest death rates of any field of employment for comparatively little pay. Most disturbingly, because many climbers have died along the way and their bodies are impossible to retrieve. Climbers must frequently travel past corpses as they make their way up the mountain.
So, talking about the Sherpa people, we will get a little bit deeper into them next episode on Mount Everest. But this is, like, one of the main jobs. And like I said, it's very little pay. And it's it is the most dangerous, highest death rates of any field of employment. So, yes, yeah. It has the most deaths, mm-hmm. which a lot of them have. So, the Himalayan mountains have long been home to indigenous groups living in the valleys called the Sherpa. The most famous of these people are the Sherpa. The word Sherpa has often used to mean mountain guide. So that's why they're called Sherpa. Though it actually refers to an ethnic group. The Sherpa have valuable experience in the mountain climbing, which they can provide to other climbers. Most climbs on Everest would be impossible without the Sherpa's logistical help and knowledge. However, their way of life extends beyond helping Everest climbers. Traditionally, their lifestyle has consisted of farming, herding, and trade. And because they live at such a high altitude year-round, they're accustomed to the low oxygen levels. So they can actually breathe better up there. Which, my family was talking about this a little bit. But when you stay in places long, for a long time, what was I going to say? When you stay in places for a long time, your body adapts. That's kind of a cool thing about humans, is your body can adapt to the conditions of the weather. It's cool that they do that. But every time before you're allowed to climb Mount Everest, I think there's a ceremony that you have to do, because the Sherpa believe that Mount Everest is a god, in a way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, think about it.
Don't think about it. It's a mountain. But they think it's a god, so they always do a ceremony in basically allowing passage to be able to climb up her face. Well, that kind of sounded weird.
Climb up her face?
But to climb up the face of the mountain.
Why do you keep doing dramatic pauses?
I don't know. But the first ever recorded... Oh, I already said that.
It's 555.
Okay. Probably, yeah. Just... so, that's some fun information on all of that. what? Let's see here. So, an hour above high camp on the southeast ridge of Everest, Panuru Sherpa and I passed the first body. This is by Mark Jenkins, by the way. The dead climber was on his side as if napping in the snow, his head half covered by the hood of his parka, goose down blowing from holes torn in his insulated pants. 10 minutes later, we stepped around another body, her torso shrouded in a Canadian flag, an abandoned oxygen bottle holding down the flapping fabric. Trudging nose to butt up the ropes that have been fixed to the steep slope. So yes, there are helping ropes all the way up the mountain. But Panaru and I were wedged between strangers above us and below us. The day before, at Camp 3, our team had been part of a small group, but when we woke up this morning, we were stunned to see an endless line of climbers passing near our tents. Now, bumper to bumper, at least 8,230 meters, 27,000 feet, we were forced to move at exactly the same speed as everybody else, regardless of strength or ability. In the swirling darkness before midnight, I gazed up at the string of lights, climbers, headlamps rising into the black sky. Above me, there were more than 100 slow-moving climbers. In one rocky section, at least 20 people were attached to a single ratty rope anchored by a single badly bent picket bounded into the ice. If the picket popped, the rope or carabiner would instantly snap from the rate of 24 fallen climbers, and they would all cartwheel down the face to their death.
Woo! Panaru, the lead Sherpa of our team, and I unclipped from the lines, swerved out into the open ice, and began soloing. For experienced mountaineers, a safer option. 20 minutes later, another corpse, still attached to the line of ropes, he was sitting in the snow, frozen solid as stone, his face black, his eyes wide open. Several hours later, before the Hillary Step, a 12.2-meter, 40-foot wall of rock and the last obstacle before the summit, we passed yet another corpse. His stubbly face was gray, his mouth open as if moaning from the pain of death.
Later, I would learn the names of these four climbers. Chinese He Wenye, who was 55, Nepali-Canadian Shrie Shan Chlorphine, 33, South Korean Song Won Bin, 44, and German Eberhard Schaff, 61. Man, imagine hiking up a mountain at 61, especially the tallest mountain above surface in the world. As I cramponed past their icy corpse on my own descent from the summit, I thought of the shattering sorrow their families and friends would experience when they heard the news. I, too, had lost friends to the mountains. Exactly why these individuals died still wasn't clear. However, many recent deaths on Everest have been attributed to a dangerous lack of experience. Without enough training at high altitudes, some climbers are unable to judge their own stamina and don't know when to turn around and call it quits. Only half the people here have the experience to climb this mountain, Panaru told me. The half without experience are most likely to die. Too often, it's not the mountain's harshness that kills climbers, but their own hubris. I don't know what that means, but Jake, will you read this?
How different it was 50 years ago when, on May 1st, 1963, James Whittaker, accompanied only by Sherpa Nawang Gumbu, became the first American to reach the summit of the world. Big Jim did it by climbing the Southeast Ridge, the same route pioneered in 1953 by the peerless New Zealander Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing Norgay.
Again, the first people of the summit, the mountain. Apparently. Hope, maybe. We don't know. Remember George Mallory and Andrew Irving? Might have been.
Whittaker had climbed Denali, Mount McKinley, a few years before, and it was Gumbu's third trip to Everest. 3 weeks after Whittaker and Gumbu's ascent, in an unprecedented act of boldness, teammates Tom Hornbin and Willie Unsold clawed their way up a completely new route, the West Ridge. The two men had been teammates on the 1960 American-Pakistan Karokaram expedition. On that same day, Barry Bishop and Lute Gerstead made the second American ascent on the Southeast Ridge. The two teams managed to meet below the summit, but by then it was dark and they were forced to bivouac it at 8,534 meters. A risk, last-ditch option, never before attempt. Without tents, sleeping bags, stoves, Sherpas, oxygen, water, or food, they weren't expected to survive.
Goodness, they were lucky, Whittaker said. If they had been in any wind, they would have all perished. It would have been horrible. All four men lived, although unsold, and Bishop had lost 19 toes between them. So, only one of them... Wait. One of the two had one toe. And despite the death 2 months earlier of Wyoming climber John Jake Bredbach in an accident in the Columbia Icefall, the 1963 American expedition became a tale of heroic success, the moonshot of mountaineering. Our team was on Everest to mark the anniversary of that expedition, yet as we witnessed, the mountain has become an icon for everything that is wrong with climbing, unlike in 1963, when only six people reached the top in the spring of 2012, more than 500 mobbed to the summit. When I arrived at the apex on May 25th, it was so crowded I couldn't find a place to stand. Meanwhile, down below at the Hillary Step, the lines were so long that some people going up waited more than 2 hours, shivering, growing weak. This even though the weather was excellent. If these throngs of climbers had been caught in a storm, as others were in 1996, the death toll could have been staggering.
Everest has been a trophy, but now that almost 4,000 people have reached its summit, some more than once, the feat means less than it did a half century ago. Today, roughly 90% of the climbers on Everest are guided clients, many without basic climbing skills, having paid $30,000 to $120,000 to be on the mountain. Too many, Kalawili, expect to reach the summit, a significant number to do, but under appalling conditions, the two standard routes, the Northeast Ridge and the Southeast Ridge, are not only dangerously crowded, but also distinguishedly polluted.
Disgustingly,
my bad, polluted, with garbage leaking out of the glaciers and pyramids of human excrement, befouling the high camps. And then, there at the deaths, besides the four climbers who perished on the Southeast Ridge, six others lost their lives in 2012, including three Sherpas.
Clearly, the world's highest peak is broken. But if you talk to the people who know it best, they'll tell you it's not beyond repair. Russell Bryce, 60. Oh, sorry, I lost my place. One of the obvious problems is that clients don't respect the knowledge and experience of Sherpas. Anchor says the Sherpas are, in a way, partly to blame. Most of them are Tibetan Buddhists whose culture and religious principles discourage confrontation. Clients sometimes discard their advice and die, Anger says. Last year was a case in point. We're trying to help the Sherpas become more assertive. Modern technology, which is already ubiquitous on Everest, everyone at base camp has access to a cell phone or the internet, could also make the mountain safer. In a meeting with the ministry last summer, Inker proposed something new: identification cards issued with every climbing permit. The Everest ID would contain data that could save the life of a climber or Sherpa, Inker explains.
It would have to be the climber's photo, of course, but more important, a QR code, a type of barcode scanned with a smartphone by an Everest climbing ranger. The QR code would...
Everest climbing ranger.
The QR code would reveal all pertinent information: age, experience, health history, allergies, insurance, family, emergency phone numbers, everything. Anchor said that Kathmandu bureaucrats sat there looking at him with blank faces. I even got out my phone and showed them how it would work. He says, it's 2012. This isn't difficult. It's just like a ski pass.
Despite all the problems on the mountain, Everest still stands alone. There will always be people who want to climb the world's highest point, because there's more to being on Everest than getting hemmed in by crowds or confronted by heaps of trash. The mountain is so high and so indifferent, it calls upon every climber, at one time or another, to rise to his or her better self. There is also beauty on Everest. I'll never forget the breathtaking view from our perch at Camp 3, clouds rolling up the western CWM. CWMs are crevices or fissures, like a slow-motion reverse avalanche, or the visceral relief of a cup of scalding soup at Camp 4, or the crunch of my crampons in the crystalline labyrinth of the Quimbin Icefall, just above base camp. I'll treasure the memory of climbing with friends on the mountain. I committed my life to them, and they committed their lives to me.
Such moments are the reasons climbers keep coming back to Everest. It's not simply about reaching the summit, but about showing respect for the mountain and enjoying the journey. Now it's up to us to restore a sense of sanity to the top of the world.
Alrighty! It was fun to talk about Mount Everest. Can't wait to do it next week again. And yes, we will be hopefully posting as often as we can. We have an email called findadventureanywhere@gmail.com. No caps, no spaces. I forgot to say that Jake is my co-host /co-owner, I guess I should say. So he will be here every week. Thank you for listening. Share this with your family and friends. And
we'll see you later. Next time.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that again.
We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.